My name is Lisa Venegas. I am 44 years old. Today is November 3rd, 2007, and we're in the Nashville Public Library. And I'm here with my mother, Elizabeth Anita Clark, also known as Betty.
I am Elizabeth Anita Clark, and I am age 80. Today's date is November 3, 2007, and I am at the Nashville Public Library.
Well, Mom, we're here to talk about you, and you were born in Germany, and I know you want to talk about your life in Germany, what brought you here to the States.
Right. My acquaintance with America started when the war ended in 1945. I was pretty shell-shocked from bombings and being shot at by airplanes and what have you. And so when the troops came, we pretty much hid in the cellar the first few days. And finally, I was contacted by the occupational troops and told that since I was a photographer, I was to do the photo work within a 50-mile radius for the troops. And somebody would come every day and bring films, and another person would come and pick them up. In the process of doing that, I was also taken to Auschwitz and Buchenwald. I was 17 years old, and I saw the greatest horrors I would ever encounter in my life. And it was a shock.
Well, it was 17. That's a very young age to be seeing that.
It was terrible. And it sort of shaped my life from there on in. And number one, kindness to your fellow man is the first thing that comes to mind that you have to live by. And the second is believe what you hear, because all these things that happened were true, even though people are still in denial to this date. I want them to know it is true. It is true. And all I could think at that time was, here by the grace of God go I.
Now, you had your father pretty much led the resistance in his town, didn't he?
Exactly. Because he was against Hitler. He had a heart attack and died at age 47. So I lost him, my great hero. So at any rate, the troops supplied me with a library. I had no knowledge of English. I learned English through the radio, AFN radio. Nashville was very prominent there, country music, to the point that my English was very tainted. People who spoke to me said, "Honey child, where from down south are you?" So at any rate, they left behind, when they went back to the States, they left behind their libraries, paperbacks, and I became a ferocious reader. I probably read books 2-3 times to get the full meaning of them, and my English progressed tremendously, especially because American newspaper was delivered to me every night as well, so I was kept up on current events, and my English improved.
So you went to work for the Rhine Air Force Base?
Rhine Main Air Force Base. Okay. After the troops left, photography was out because people did not have money to purchase pictures. They had no money for anything. So I taught myself how to type and became a typist, and then a secretary, and then an interpreter. And then I was able to pay back by teaching conversational German on Rhein-Main Air Base. I did that on the side. I wasn't paid for that. So in 1953, I married an Air Force pilot.
What is his name? What was his name?
Leo B. Clark, first lieutenant.
And he was from Maine?
He was from Millinocket, Maine. And we went to the States, and 6 months later, he got killed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, dropping paratroopers. So,
now that was a big story at the time too, wasn't it?
That was a tremendous story. Yeah, yeah. He needn't have died, but he saved hundreds of lives by steering the plane away from falling paratroopers. So, at any rate, I went to live in Maine for a year and a half, and found out that, as an immigrant, since I was no longer married, I would have to wait 5 years to become a citizen, which to me was just unacceptable. And Margaret Chase Smith, the senator from Maine, tried to help me in changing that law. So instead of having to wait 5 years, I still did not have to wait more than three, but she was not successful. So the Army contacted me, and they said they needed a person to establish a lab in Guam. And I said, oh, I'll be happy to do that. And then I found out that I couldn't go because I wasn't a citizen. So I was again handicapped. So the Army said, oh, we're the only branch in the services who accept non-citizens if you agree to become one within 3 months. And I said, oh, yes, I will. So I went to basic training at Anniston, Alabama, and qualified for all 13 jobs that were available to WACS at that time. And finally, they found Fort Hood, Texas, needed a photographer, needed a photo lab chief. So I was transferred to Fort Hood, Texas.
Can I ask you something? Why was it so important for you to become a citizen?
Oh, because, I mean, for so many reasons. Number one, having lived in Germany and having Hitler come to power, I needed to be able to participate in the process of electing people. Going to vote was tremendously important to me. I just could not fathom anything happening in this country and me standing on the sideline watching. I needed to participate. So that's why citizenship was a very, very important thing to me. And so there.
So you were in Fort Hood, Texas at that time?
I was in Fort Hood, Texas, yes. And I did all kinds of, I set up photo labs for all kinds of organizations that came during the summertime, National Guard, ROTC, you name it. And so then I met your father.
Now, that's a
Hector
funny story.
Hector Venegas.
Because Dad was a steward for Eastern Airlines, and you were in
the
Army.
I was in the Army.
That was a total role reversal there.
Exactly. At any rate, we got married, and I had to leave the armed forces because in those days, women were not allowed to be married when they were in the service.
Really?
Yeah, that I still believe in that. I still believe in that. So at any rate, moved to New York for a year. I worked as a photographer for a year. Then your father got transferred to Cleveland, Ohio. So we moved to Cleveland, lived there for 3 years. I was looking for a job, and Printing Industry of Cleveland looked for a bookkeeper. They were mistaken. They thought they were looking for a photographer, but they were looking for a bookkeeper. Now, I'd never done bookkeeping in my life, but I said, okay, how long do I have to close the books? There were three sets of them for three organizations. And they said, you have exactly 7 days. And I said, okay, if I don't close the books in 7 days, you don't owe me a cent. I closed the books on the last day of the month, and I was hired. And I handled a group insurance plan for 72 member companies. I established the premiums and I paid the claims and what have you. And I did bookkeeping, and then the cost accountant died, and I had asked him to teach me what he was doing, and so I became a cost accountant. They didn't hire anybody until I left 3 years later. So,
and how many people did they have to hire when you left?
Oh, Lord, four of them. So at any rate, we went to Puerto Rico, lived in Puerto Rico, and I became group insurance manager for Republic National Life, something I hadn't done before. But I had a big rate book, and I set the rates, and I had the company accept them. And I paid the claims at the same time. And unfortunately, they did not pay women but what they paid men. I was paid half of what my predecessor was paid, and I did not find that acceptable. So I went and I studied insurance, and I passed my broker's license, all lines of insurance, and opened my own business.
Well, and I have to think that that's probably wasn't very common back in, that was in the 60s, right?
Yeah.
For a woman to have her own business. And especially in a Latin culture.
Oh, it was tough. And not only that, when, I forgot to say, when I first came over, I had to do the same thing I had done when I learned English. I shut out everything and just concentrated on Spanish. And within 6 months, I stood in front of 400 people and spoke to them in Spanish, telling them about their insurance plan. And so from then on, I mean, I had the courage to do it, and it just went fine. And yeah, I was there for 13 years.
Yeah. So. And that's where I came along.
Yeah. You came along, and then unfortunately, I got divorced. And decided I wanted to go back to the States and see what I could do for both of us over there. And so I went and applied for a job in 1974. And that was 7 days before ERISA, the Employee Retirement Equity Security Act of 1974. And I went to New England, and I had high recommendations. And they said, do you think you can handle the pension plans? And I said, well, let me have that file and take it to the hotel tonight, and I'm going to look it over, and I'll tell you tomorrow morning. And the next day I said, I can handle that, yeah. No problem.
And that was 74. That was the time of a big recession, wasn't it? I mean, there weren't a whole lot of jobs.
Everybody said, you don't get a job. In 74, you don't get a job. White-collar jobs are out totally. You don't get a job. And I said, of course I get a job. You're a woman. I was 46 years old. Think of it.
Yeah.
I went back and got the job.
And we moved to Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, as a woman executive then, I mean, that's basically what you became.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you really paved the way for a lot of women to really be executives and management, and, you know, helped raise the bar for a lot of women to be able to make a real career beside just being a secretary or anything else. I mean, you really helped women rise to higher positions.
That's right. And, you know, and you kind of keep that in mind also. You know, so everything you do, you know you have to excel and set an example. hours didn't mean a thing to me. I mean, I worked long hours every day, and many years I didn't even take a vacation. But I figured seeing our clients all over the South and in Puerto Rico was enough vacation in itself, you know. So so I really enjoyed doing what I was doing, and at the same time, oh my goodness, our business improved so much that we had to hire. I mean, we went from a 3-person office in 1974 to an 8-person office just for the pension within a year.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a great thing, and I got to really, you know, do the things I enjoyed doing, which was talking to people. Sometimes you explained a pension plan to a group of maybe 10 people, and other times there were hundreds.
Yeah.
Factories, you know, that you had to explain the pension plan to and encourage them to save for the future and have a safety niche for their retirement, you know? So
let me ask you something that you've said many times, and that's that you have always felt you had so many more opportunities in the United States than you did in Germany.
Oh, in Germany, you're typecast. Okay, and number one, I was not allowed to have higher education. At age 13, I had to serve a year on a farm. And because of my father's stance in his politics, I was not allowed to do anything but serve an apprenticeship. So that's where I became a photographer, because my father was an amateur photographer. And so that's how I fell into photography. But I was so mad at the inability to study. That's why I'm still today a ferocious reader, you know. I just never stopped learning. And just like in the Army at Fort Hood, Texas, I took classes in the non-commissioned officers training, learned elocution, and was sent to the post theaters to talk about world communism and the Nazis and the danger of communism. And so it was, again, that was something that I learned that helped me in the future when I stood in front of employees talking about their pension plan. You know, it just all developed. And I was so fortunate because I have been able to take so many tests, and I passed my GED, and then at the University of Maine, they tested me, and I was in the last year of college in my knowledge and what have you. Then New
Even
England
though
life.
You'd only been through 13 years of schooling in Germany.
Exactly. So these are the opportunities that this country provides for you, that it's a shame if people do not make use of them when they come here, you know. I have never considered accepting a handout. I have always tried to earn what I receive in every fashion or form. Charities, yes, I contribute to so many charities. It's pathetic, really, because I don't know how I ended up on all those lists. But the thing is, I have received so much that I have to give some back.
Mm-hmm.
I have to give back. It's something that's inside of you that you must do.
So, is there something that if you had to say how you would like to be remembered, then what would you want to be remembered for?
that's not easy to say. No, I try to be a good person, a good citizen. Never failed to vote, never once. Yeah, and. like that broker said in South Carolina to a friend who wanted a job like mine, there's only one Benny Clark, so don't try to imitate me because it won't work. There's only one Benny Clark. But no, that's how I want to be remembered, as somebody who earned her right to be in this country, who earned every step of the way the things that were given to her. Be a good citizen. I want to be a good citizen till the day I die. You know, I don't want ever have this country face the things that Germany faced with Hitler. That's it.
Well, you do have another child besides me, and that's your son, Robert Ault.
Yeah.
So is there something that you would like to say about him? Any stories about him that you would like to share, or something that you would like him to know?
That's not fair.
Well, he's a pretty amazing person, and a lot of that comes from you.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And unfortunately, that was something I did that I do not talk about. And
but there's got to be something that you are very, like you said, you're proud of him. So what is it that you're proud of about him, and that you would want him to know about how you feel about him?
Oh, I think he is an exact replica of my father.
Really? In what way?
Oh, he knows how to do everything. I mean, it's just, there's nothing he cannot accomplish. Since he was little, he just absolutely... I mean, nothing he could not do. And I insisted on both my children going through college because I couldn't do that. And so he did, and he picked up Spanish in Puerto Rico so fast it wasn't funny. Again, I mean, he stepped into my company that I was working for at the time, selling mutual funds, and he became an executive. He's vice president. He's a stockbroker. He's he's fantastic.
He's the most successful.
I'm very, very proud of him.
He's the most successful of all of us.
I'm proud of both my children. Oh my goodness, yes. Yeah.
Well. And, you know, it's funny because at one point we thought he was going to be a beach bum. So he redeemed
exactly.
himself along the way.
Exactly. Yeah.
Good. Well, Mom,
yeah,
what about...
I had to kick him out. Kick him out of the nest. Wake him up. Yeah.
But, you know, he obviously turned out the better for it. So.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, that's about my life story. It's been wonderful.
Well, let me ask you about Buddy, your first husband, because I always thought that was such a tragic story. I mean, you fell in love, you were only married 6 months, and then he died. He's killed.
Yeah, I was married 9 months when he got killed. Oh. 6 months in this country. And I mean, if it hadn't been for Mom and Dad Clark, oh my goodness, what a wonderful, wonderful family. I had met them just after I came, and on vacation for 4 weeks, and that was the extent of our knowledge of each other, really. So they took me in and they just absolutely treated me as one of their own. They were just marvelous.
Was it strange to them that he married somebody in Germany while he was stationed there? I mean, was that ever a problem
at all?
Or
no? Not at all. I mean, they just, as a matter of fact, the one thing that stuck to them was, you don't sound German. What is you sound like a southerner. So, and then there was Uncle Archie, who was a Maine guide, wonderful. I went hunting and fishing with him. And, I met Ted Williams through him, who was also an amateur photographer and a hunter and fisher. So, another opportunity to learn something about the States, which was baseball. I had no idea about baseball. And that was just marvelous.
But now you're a huge baseball fan.
Oh, my goodness. And the Boston Red Sox, of course.
Yeah.
So that's just about it.
Well, you've actually met a lot of famous people. You've met a lot of famous people.
Oh.
Now, there was Bishop Sheen.
Oh, my goodness. Ah. I went to Paris and went to an aunt of a sister-in-law who had survived the Titanic, and her husband got killed, and she and her daughter were living in Paris. And when I landed at the airport, I had seen Bishop Sheen with Mom Clark on TV every week. I mean, we without fail. And my goodness, we were waiting for luggage together, just the two of us. And I had had about a half a bottle of champagne in the plane. And I was half looped, I guess. So we started talking to each other. And he got my life story out of me with about 20 minutes. In Puerto Rico, governor of Puerto Rico, his wife had some kind of a party going on at home, and the guest speaker was Bishop Sheen. I couldn't believe it, and I had told your father about meeting him in Paris, and he never believed me. So here we stand in line. And Bishop Sheen is there to greet everybody, and all the ladies said, oh, we met in such and such a school in the States, you know. And he says, I am so sorry, but you see, I meet so many people, I really can't remember, but it's good to see you again. And here come I, and he said, Betty Clark, what are you doing in Puerto Rico? He remembered, and that was about 17 years later. He still remembered my name. I must have made some impression in Paris.
Well, that half bottle of champagne probably didn't hurt.
Yeah. Well, the other big person I met, of course, was on Ryman Air Base when I was volunteering to take some photos. While I was secretary, I really wasn't involved in photography any longer, but I was with the lab off and on to do certain things. And I took a picture of Eisenhower. And, I mean, he saluted me.
And he was a general.
Oh, he was a general at the time, of course, you know, and I knew all about him. So, that was awesome. Absolutely. Yeah, I met some very interesting people in my life. I really did. So.
Mm-hmm. And was it Harry Belafonte that was in Puerto Rico? That was Mona Lisa. Who was that? Who sings Mona Lisa?
Nat King Cole.
Nat King Cole.
Nat King Cole sung Mona Lisa for me. Of course, there were so many people that we met in casinos in Puerto Rico. Oh, my goodness, yes. But there were also some very interesting people that your father was working for the industrial promotion firm, part of the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. And that's when I met very interesting people from Europe, manufacturer, and I used to volunteer translating, and I still spoke Spanish and French and German and some Italian. I had forgotten most of my Italian when I learned Spanish, but I was helping out with those things, and that was very interesting. But volunteering, you know, off and on, and God, it's been an interesting life.
Yeah, because with Dad's job, you got to visit with the governor of Puerto Rico a lot and meet a lot of dignitaries through the government and such too, right? I mean, didn't you do a lot of entertaining?
I met the greatest governor, Muñoz Marín, and I met him in Cleveland. He was supposed to come 3 hours earlier, and somehow traffic was bad and the weather was bad and what have you, and everybody left, and I was sitting there by myself, and he comes through the door, and we're sitting there talking to each other. And the next time I saw him was in Puerto Rico, and also Doña Fela, the mayoress of San Juan, the woman of the Americas for 8 years running. So I met her, and I mean, it just...
Why were they so amazing? Why did you like them so much?
Who? Well,
the mayoress and the governor.
Oh, the governor was absolutely... I mean, he took Puerto Rico out of the sugarcane manufacturing business, you know, and brought industries. And had a woman all of a sudden got a job, for goodness sakes, where they never had the opportunity before, you know. So there were many opportunities to climb out of poverty that he provided. So he was a great man, absolutely. He was also somewhat of a poet. So
really?
And Doña Fela, she was open to everybody's problems. She would listen, and she had one day a week where she just had open doors, and everybody that had a problem could come and discuss it with her. She was really one of the people, you know, so she was great.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it seems to me like with Dad's side of the family, there were a lot of very interesting characters as well that must have opened a lot of doors, you know, like, I don't know, Guillermo Venegas and, you know, some of the artists and on Dad's side of the family.
Oh. Well, there was Guillermo Venegas, who was a tango singer. He was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Somehow he ended up in New York, and he was working for the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, too. That's how he got the job to go to Cleveland. There was what was the other guy's name? Another Venegas, who was a singer and who was in Puerto Rico.
I don't know.
I can't remember his first name, but at any rate, he was so well known. He was fantastic too. Yeah.
So. I had just thought that might have been an interesting social life, you know, between Dad's family and both of yours jobs. And
oh, yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, I did an awful lot of entertaining.
Yeah, I remember that growing up. There were a lot of parties at the house.
Yeah, yeah. I used to be known as a good cook, too.
You still are.
I'm not so sure about that anymore.
No. We have 5 minutes left.
We have five minutes.
So we have to come up. So I'm going to come ask you one of these questions here. Okay. Wow. What was the hardest moment you had when I was growing up? She's speechless. We'll move on. Okay. Do you have any regrets?
The only regret I have is not having had higher education. I mean, that's my biggest regret. that's something I would have liked to pursue. As a matter of fact, I would have probably become a professional student if I'd had the opportunity. But otherwise, I made use of all the hours of the day and all the years in my life to do things and to better myself and to provide for my family and to be a good citizen. So I don't think I have many regrets that I can think of. Yeah. Not really.
Is there a happiest moment in your life? One moment that really stands out to you as one of the happiest?
The birth of my children, definitely, without a question. So there are many joys in life, you know, that some are fleeting and some are lasting. My grandchildren are a great joy right now, you know. So I don't know.
Okay. Well, what is the saddest point in your life? Is there a saddest moment?
Well, number one, that's my father. Loss of my father. The loss of my husband. The inability to have a lasting marriage with your father. So those are sad moments, but you overcome them and you move on. That's what life is all about. So.
And let me see. Is there anything that you would like to say that you haven't had a chance to say yet that you would like to add to this interview?
God, I don't think so. I think I've said it all.
Okay, good.
Thank each other.
Thanks, Mom.
You're welcome.
I appreciate you coming and doing this.
It's been interesting.
It has.
Thank you.